Welcome to the April edition of our editor's audio review. Today I will review some highlights from the April 2017 issue, and we will be interviewing two authors from an impactful paper on patient perspectives momentarily. Let me just share with you a brief summary of some other papers. First, Leslie Cho and colleagues published an interesting comparison between the Kansas City Cardiomyopathy Questionnaire and New York Heart Association classification in terms of their correlations with functional capacity and clinical outcomes. They confirmed that the KCCQ adds value with a statistically significant increase in the reclassification index when applied to the prediction of clinical outcomes at 1 year. It really is getting to be time for us to use this tool in routine clinical practice. The nitrite controversy in heart failure rages on, this time with HFrEF. Dilek Ural and colleagues from Istanbul performed a propensity-matched analysis of nearly 650 patients and found that oral nitrates on top of guideline-directed medical therapy did not affect all-cause mortality or hospitalization risk. This adds another layer to the story and really points to the need, once and for all, for formal study of the question. Shelley Miyamoto and colleagues present data on myocardial fibrosis in children who have dilated cardiomyopathy and compare their findings to adult patients. It's a provocative study, and we asked April Stempien Otero to provide context in an excellent accompanying editorial. Dan Judge and colleagues provide a brief report on prediction of the presence of amyloid on endomyocardial biopsy. With increasing interest in this area, their findings may have direct clinical relevance. They found that readily available clinical parameters such as age, presence of peripheral neuropathy, and septal wall thickness were predictors. And before we get to the featured paper today, I will also mention that we are publishing a stimulating paper by J. Rajadurai and colleagues about heart failure in the Asia and Pacific regions. It's an elegant review, and we encourage you to take a look. The increase in heart failure prevalence is becoming more international in scope, and this paper adds important insights from Asia. And now to the issue at hand, a paper by Madhav Narayan, Larry Allen, and colleagues from the University of Colorado entitled Patient Perspectives on Communication of Individualized Estimates in Heart Failure. This paper caught the eyes of the editors because the authors have asked a fundamental question about how we should use prognostic models and specifically what patients want to know. So let's start there. Madhav and Larry, first off, congratulations on your study.
Thank you.
Larry, what were the fundamental questions going into the project?
Well, Paul, risk models are pervasive in the practice of medicine. It's hard to go around the wards or see patients in clinic without thinking about a risk model like the TIMI score or in heart failure, the Seattle Heart Failure Risk Model. They help us in our medical decision-making. They are important in triaging patients and considering what therapies we might apply. But one of the things that we noticed is that these risk models are really largely confined to clinicians and occasionally policymakers, but are rarely provided to patients directly. So here we have clinicians making recommendations based on risk models. But equally important is providing those risks to patients who are the experts on their values and how therapies might affect them personally. So with that in mind and with a lot of background work in risk modeling, we really wanted to see how patients received these risk models, what their reactions were to them, and how they understood them and integrated them into the clinical decision-making they were making.
Well, Madhav, I understand that you began this work as an undergraduate and carried it through now into medical school. So how did you perform this research?
So this research was really the first study of its kind in the field in, as far as actually providing the risk information to patients. Therefore, we conducted it using a qualitative approach where we took the Seattle Heart Failure Model, introduced the model, and asked patients whether they wanted their score, which was calculated based off of their data at the time. For this, we used information from both inpatient and outpatient wards. We looked for a broad array of patients, including people with varying demographics, but also people who were at different stages of their heart failure progression. And we tried to get as wide of a sample as possible. We looked for a couple of different themes, preferences for receiving estimates. We looked for their reactions. We asked them how they were going to apply the data. And we also asked them about how they understood the uncertainty surrounding prognosis.
So maybe you can tell us then, it looks like you divided the patients into what you refer to as decliners and acceptors. Decliners and acceptors of individualized prognostic information. So what were the key findings related to that, those two groups?
Sure. Well, the acceptors, first of all, outnumbered the decliners. The acceptors in this case being people who accepted the offer to look at their own Seattle Heart Failure estimate. And in particular, they expressed the notion that viewing their personalized estimates restored some sort of control and hope for most patients, and that it rarely increased their anxiety. They also mentioned that the data from the model was limited in terms of its usefulness going forward, because they thought that there were additional factors that should have been weighted into the model based off of their experiences and what they've seen in the world. In terms of understanding uncertainty, the acceptors kind of contextualized estimates through observations that uncertainty is really pervasive in life. In terms of the decliners, a lot of them mentioned the fact that they did not really believe in prognostic risk models, saying it's very difficult to predict what's going to happen 5 or 10 years or even 1 month from now. And they did not believe that it would provide them really useful information. Only in a couple cases was fear of seeing the data a factor.
Well, that's very interesting. You know, Mark Sullivan a number of years ago stated that from his perspective, the only value patients received from receiving prognostic information is the enjoyment they get from beating the prediction. But it sounds like there's a lot more to it. What was the breakdown just in terms of numbers? So, you know, is it a 2-to-1, 3-to-1 ratio? And do you think that your relatively limited sample is generalizable and, you know, across different, let's say, ethnic groups, racial groups, and so forth?
So in terms of the breakdown, the acceptors were about 17 and the decliners were 7, so about almost a 3-to-1 margin. We tried to get patients from a variety of backgrounds, but as you mentioned, we interviewed 24 patients total, so there is a limitation in terms of how generalizable it is to all heart failure patients in general, and obviously this was at one center. But there are a couple takeaways from this. One, we didn't find that seeing the prognostic information really spiked fear amongst patients. And two, that they generally have a pretty good understanding, even though they do have limited numeracy, they have a pretty good understanding of some of the general factors that go into whether somebody lives 5 or 10 years or whether somebody lives a few months. And they understand that there are multiple factors involved.
Well, that's very interesting. Larry, maybe before closing, what do you think your next steps are from the research perspective, and what can clinicians take away from this in their own practice?
Well, as you know, we do a lot of work with shared decision-making, particularly as facilitated through formal patient decision aids. And I think this gives us encouragement that providing information to patients, one, is not horribly anxiety-provoking in most cases and often is actually reassuring to them. But I think perhaps more importantly, that patients qualitatively seem to be able to digest risk information in a way that can be meaningful and can help them move forward as they tackle complex decisions and even just a general understanding of what's going on with their medical care. So I think we're going to be more excited and more willing, I think, to try and take some of these scores and put them into real practice in a way that others like John Spertus have tried to do.
Well, thank you, Larry and Madhav. Again, congratulations on this important work. And speaking of John Spertus, I will say that he, along with Michael Nassif and Tim Fendler, wrote a thought-provoking accompanying editorial, which is also worth the read. And that concludes our review of the April 2017 issue of the Journal of Cardiac Failure. We hope you enjoyed our second monthly audio installment. This is your editor, Paul Hauptmann, signing off, and listen in again next month.